a theological posture to the overwhelming. Or Gideon, thoughts, godly thoughts, on what to do in overwhelming situations. When I'm confronted with an overwhelming situation, I like to turn to the fount of all wisdom and open Netflix and turn to Paw Patrol. Our family has been binge-watching Paw Patrol for the last few years. And so to there I turn. If you're unfamiliar with Paw Patrol, it is the craze amongst those that only reach up to your waist. And it's about a boy and some pups, and they go around solving problems in Adventure Bay. And they always seem to find a solution to every conceivable thing that comes their way. One episode, there is a fire pup named Marshall, and he's wanting to be the best fire pup in the world. And so there's an obstacle course that he needs to do, and he's feeling overwhelmed and nervous, and he's not sure if he can do it. And he remembers the words that Ryder coached him with as he's been practicing for this event. Do your best and forget the rest. And those words we often hear in our society, doesn't matter what you're confronted with. I mean, at its best. They tell you, do your best and forget the rest. Put in your best effort and just go from there. 2 weeks ago, I spoke to you about God's creating the world and our concern for it. Because God created the world and has left us in charge, we should care for this world, regardless of what science says that we should care for it or how we should care for it. And so, as I mentioned, the situation isn't quite hopeful for us in this world, and the catastrophe. There are a lot of things that need to change in the way that we live in order to meet the recommended goals that scientists put out for us, in order for the world not to implode and life to become very difficult for us. And you know what? Based on our track record and what we've done so far, our best efforts, we could say, scientists say that we need to do a lot more in a lot less time. And I find that overwhelming. I find that up to now, the work that we have done hasn't really brought us very far, and the work that we need to do needs to happen substantially quicker and with much greater effect. And I find that overwhelming. And it's also interesting that they've also sort of coined a term about climate change anxiety. That people are overwhelmed about the future of the world and they don't know what to do. And so, as we look at the future and as we are overwhelmed, what posture should we take? How should we live? And my belief is that we should live with hope. We should live hopefully for what is to come. Not because of our own track record. Not because of human ingenuity. But hope because there is a God who saves. There is a God who likes to step into overwhelming situations and do amazing things. That is what we read in the Bible. Stories of times when God's people have been faced with overwhelming situations that they didn't know how they were going to survive. And God steps in and helps. Now, what we don't often read, or what you can read in between the lines, is there's a lot of times when people cry out for help. And help doesn't come either. And yet, the ongoing witness of the Bible is that we should hope and we should pray, because in the end of things, there is only one hope, and he is or she is or it is the Lord God. We have read a psalm this morning, and I have mentioned Gideon. And I'm going to tie the two together, and I'm going to let you sort of guess until we get there. So I want to begin with Gideon, because I think Gideon is a wonderful story of the way that God likes to step into overwhelming and challenging circumstances and do amazing things. So Gideon is a judge, and he is found in the book of Judges, and it's in chapters 6, 7, and 8. And if you're looking for Judges, it's after Joshua. And Joshua is the sixth book in the Bible, if you're counting. And the time of the Judges, just to put this into context, it is probably the dark ages of the Israelite people. They've come off some great years with Moses and Joshua and the people who lived during Joshua's reign. And under those years, the people followed God and things were good. And then we are told that that generation has died out. And the people did not remember the stories of God. And the people didn't remember to worship and to honor God with their lives. And so things got really bleak. Everyone did what was right in their own eyes. It's sort of the synopsis of this time period. And just like they were in slavery in Egypt, and they cried out to God for help, so we hear in Judges, hear the Israelites crying out to God with that same voice for help. God, save us. And at this time, it's the Midianites, Amalekites, and the people of the east who have been plundering and raiding the Israelites. So this is how it works. You don't plunder and raid when there's nothing to plunder and raid. You come and plunder and raid when the harvest is ready. And so the Israelites have been out there diligently in meager land, cultivating a livelihood, a hope for the future for their children. Grain or fruit or whatever. And just as the harvest has come in, it's being collected, bands of raiding Amalekites, Midianites, and people of the east would sweep through, kill some people, and steal their future. Now is such a time. The harvest is approaching. The harvest has begun. There's a man named Gideon of the tribe of Manasseh, of a clan of Manasseh, a weak, somebody insignificant in his household, it is told. And he's hiding at a wine press, threshing out some grain for his family. And it is there that God comes to him and he says to him, Gideon, you are a man of valor. You are a bold and courageous man. I want you to save the Israelites. And Gideon says to God, God, if I were as bold and courageous, would I be here in hiding, threshing out my grapes, my wheat, in a place that I hope nobody will find me so that our future or my family's future may go on for the next time? God says, I don't care. You are the one I've chosen. I want you to save Israel, my people. And so they negotiate back and forth, and finally Gideon is convinced. And so he calls, he musters together the people of Israel, actually like four tribes. They're not really a unified people at this point in time. And he calls them together and 33,000 men muster for battle. And so they're there together. And they look down the valley where the Midianites and the Amalekites and the people of the east have gathered. And what do they see? They see a swarm of locusts ready to devour. They see more tanks in that valley than the sand on the seashore. They're thinking, our odds are pretty good. And God's thinking, your odds are not so good. So God says to Gideon, you have far too many men in your number. You should get rid of some. And so Gideon says, men, who here is afraid? And 22,000 put up their hand. And says, all right, go home. We don't need you. So they're left with 11,000. 11,000? Yeah, that's right. 11,000 men. And God says to him, Gideon, too many people. You got far too many people. And so another test with sheep's wool on a dry patch of concrete and stuff like that. Anyway, they end up coming up with 300 people. 300 people. 10%. That's all God needs. 10%. Where's the offering? Yeah. Yeah, like how I tied that in, eh? 300 people, 300 men. And with these 300 men, God defeats the Midianites, the Amalekites, and the people of the East. With 300 men. And these men don't even do anything either. They just go out there with lamps and trumpets. And they blow and they make some noise. And the Amalekites and the Midianites and the people of the East, I'm just going to call them people of the East from now on, they run away. And there's victory. God saves the people of Israel. And for the next 40 years, while Gideon is alive, the land has rest, we are told. A remarkable victory in the face of overwhelming odds. And why God tells Gideon to diminish the numbers is so that all may know that it is the Lord God who saves, not the king and his army, not the war horse. It is God and God alone. And this is a message for Gideon, but it's a message for the Israelite people, and it's also a message for the people of the East, that there is a God in Israel who can save, who acts on behalf of his people, who cares about what happens to his people. In that time, and for most of ancient history, the gods don't care about people. That's why when Elijah and the prophets of Baal are had a contest, and Elijah sort of makes fun of them, you know, go wake up Baal. Go coerce Baal through certain actions to come and save you. Because the gods don't care. They just make mischief in the earth and see how humans respond. But that is not the claim of the Bible. That is not what the Bible teaches. The Bible teaches that God cares about what happens on this earth. And that God steps into history to save his people. Now, one could conjecture that because God comes in and saves his people, we are not required to do anything. After all, Gideon and his 300 men didn't actually defeat the Midianites. They actually heard rumors and were afraid and ran off on their own. But do you know that band of 300 men that Gideon had assembled, they had a strategy. They had training. They had courage and they acted. Gideon put together a strategy to confront and to fight these people least. He went there, ready to do action. These men weren't just, I was going to say farmers. They were not pitchfork, torch. Actually, they were carrying torches. This was like a... And so, they came ready to act. But victory wasn't in their hands. It was in God's hands. And if you read through the Bible, there are many more stories like this, where God steps in to history to save his people. And so we are facing, I think, as I mentioned, sort of overwhelming situation with what does the future hold for us as a people? People are talking about extinction. That's big language. And I think the witness that the Bible gives us is that we should hope in the Lord God. Because he is the only one who can save. And that we should act. That our hope is action. Our hope is strategy. Our hope is rising to the challenge. It is going out there. It is listening to people when they give us advice about how we should live. And so, in light of that, I want to read to you Psalm 33 again. And I want you to hear it through the story of Gideon. And I want you to hear it in our current, I think, overwhelming situation in regards to the climate. And I want you to hear it also in whatever situation you find yourself where you don't know how things are going to work out. Psalm 33, this is from the ESV. Shout for joy in the Lord, you righteous. Praise befits the upright. Give thanks to the Lord with a lyre. Make melody to him with a harp of 10 strings. Sing to him a new song. Play skillfully on strings with loud shouts. For the word of the Lord is upright, and all his work is done in faithfulness, and he loves righteousness and justice. And the earth is full of the steadfast love of the Lord. By the word of the Lord, the heavens were made, and by his breath of his mouth, all the host. He gathers the water of the sea in a heap, and he puts the deeps in storehouses. Let all the earth fear the Lord. Let all the inhabitants of the world stand in awe of him. For he spoke, and it came to be. He commanded, and it stood firm. The Lord brings the counsel of nations to nothing. He frustrates the plans of the people. The counsel of the Lord stands forever. The plans of his heart to all generation. Blessed is the nation whose God is the Lord. The people whom he has chosen as heritage. The Lord looks down from heaven and sees the children of man. From where he sits enthroned, he looks out on all the inhabitants of the earth. He who fashioned the hearts of all, them all, observes all their deeds. The king is not saved by his great army. A warrior is not delivered by his great strength. A war horse is a false hope for salvation, and it is by great might, and by its great might cannot rescue. Behold, the eye of the Lord is on those who fear him, on those who hope in